Welcome to Atop, the business podcast brought to you by the Babson Center for Global Commerce. In this podcast, we explore the latest trends and insights in the world of business, featuring expert guests from various industries and backgrounds. Join us as we delve into the challenges and opportunities facing businesses today, from startups to established enterprises. Our mission is to provide you with practical insights and knowledge that you can apply to your own career or business ventures. So sit back, relax, and get ready to learn from some of the brightest minds in the business world. We are strictly business, and this is Atop. Today we are here with Joe Wiegan. Joe, how are you today?
I'm quite well. Thank you for asking. Good. How are you?
I'm doing just great. Glad to have you here.
Thank you.
So, starting off, we want to talk a little bit about career readiness. So, first, we're going to start off with, how did you turn your personal interest into a career, and how did it all begin?
It's so very much a long process of sort of life's experiences, going back to being the son of a hippie comedian, on through my experience here at Sewanee, where I was the first person in my family to graduate high school, the first person to go on to college. Couldn't have done that without the scholarships provided by the University of the South and their supporters. And part of why I've wound up doing the work that I've done and why I'm prepared to do the work I do really well right now is because I wasn't doing this work when I left Sewanee. I was destined for a career in politics and public service, had a Watson Fellowship that took me around the world interviewing members of foreign parliaments or congresses in Costa Rica, South Africa, Italy, the Philippines, and South Korea. I interviewed F.W. de Klerk, the future president of South Africa, who would help the transition from apartheid. I returned to the United States, graduate school in political science. My mentor was Congressman Phil Crane, who was a Ph.D. in history, a very non-traditional course to being a member of Congress. But I think that academic background and his knowledge of American history made him especially valuable to his colleagues. He chaired the Republican Study Committee, and during my Sewanee years, I was able to serve two Tanya public service internships with Congressman Crane, both in Washington, D.C., and in his district office. I thought all of that was preparing me for the career that I knew I wanted when I first came to Sewanee. I wanted to be a member of Congress. I wanted to be governor of Illinois. I grew up in the land of Lincoln, where we learned that anyone can be president of the United States. I would posit that our recent elections have proven the point again. My classmates would have thought I might have been president of the United States someday. Well, I discovered that it's a really hard thing in Illinois politics just to make it from county commissioner to state representative. I actually lost two campaigns for that later position. In 2004, I ran for the state legislature for the second time, was endorsed by the Chicago Tribune and other significant figures in Illinois politics. Speaker of the House Denny Hastert gave his staff 2 weeks off to knock on doors against me. I lost that primary 55-45, and probably the best thing that ever happened in my life. Because after then running a gubernatorial campaign for a businessman, coming in second out of four, and the following year running the Governor Huckabee campaign for the presidency in 2008 in Illinois, I decided to more professionally pursue something that I had developed as something to make Lincoln Day dinners more fun in the state of Illinois. I was portraying Theodore Roosevelt as the result of a book that was gifted me called The Rise of Theodore Roosevelt by Edmund Morris, a Pulitzer Prize winner. Gifted to me Christmas 2001 after those horrible September 11th attacks, and prayerful and thoughtful about what I might do to help my country in that time of crisis, and too fat and too old to join the military, but I thought maybe the way I can help the country is to portray Theodore Roosevelt. So the greatest thing that Sewanee did was to give me confidence in the ability to discern information and solve problems, to think on my feet, to see possibilities and opportunities that would present themselves and react quickly to them. You know, I mentioned earlier in our visits today, Sewanee liberal arts degree. What do you do with it? Well, you do anything you want to do. You just do it really, really well. In part because we've got the responsibility to reflect well on our alma mater. So I find it interesting that in my lifetime, between being a young boy who was bronchial or asthmatic. I suffered from the same sort of inability to breathe that young Theodore Roosevelt suffered from. Like him, I built my body. Like him, I may have overdone it a bit. As a young man, I lost my mother when I was a senior here at Suwannee. She took her own life, and T.R. had sadnesses in his life. His father died when he was 19 years old at Harvard. His wife and mother died on the same day when he was 25 years old. He found healing in the outdoors and by challenging himself physically. I was an ultra marathon runner beyond being a member of the cross country team here. Physical challenges and then also professional challenges. Very often trying to, especially in politics, achieve outcomes that at the beginning people would tell you it couldn't be done. And one of the first campaigns I managed after graduate school was a state Senate campaign. The candidate who sought me out as his campaign manager was a CPA with an MBA from Harvard, graduated near the top of his class at Duke as an English major, was on the fencing team there, and at Marmion Military Academy, a very highly respected Benedictine school in Aurora, Illinois. He had been the head cadet, which is a big deal in that high school. Well, nobody gave him permission to run for the state Senate. And when we declared, it was an open seat, but it was supposed to be controlled by the head of the Republican Party, Pate Philip, a big wig in DuPage County. His hand-chosen candidate was a man named Bob Schillerstrom. And in a four-way race, we won the race with 39% of the vote and defeated Bob Schillerstrom and Pate Philip. We weren't supposed to do that. And for the rest of my career in Illinois Republican politics, where the federal prosecutor eventually proved that they were just as corrupt as the Chicago Democrats, just cheaper to buy, I usually spent my time pointing out that the emperor had no clothes, that the statements that were being made by our state government were false, and that the books were cooked. Well, that's not exactly a message that those in charge of the political environment appreciate. So it was a very difficult circumstance to work in professionally. I served as a county commissioner for 6 years through a property tax referendum, was able to save hundreds of millions of dollars for my county's taxpayers, and at the same time found it to be a very frustrating environment. And politics, my character says that when he left for Albany to take the oath of office, the words of one of my cousins were still ringing in my ears. He said, "Theodore, don't you realize the Greek etymology of the word politics? Poly meaning many, and ticks being blood-sucking insects." Well, that was politics in Illinois. You know, there's something about the quality or lack thereof of people who are attracted to be involved in an industry that's all about power and money and other people's money. My sister-in-law gave me the book, The Rise of Theodore Roosevelt. I read that book, decided to try to bring Theodore Roosevelt to life for audiences. And the skills that were honed here at Suwannee, the ability to study on the quick. I was a night study person, getting ready for that 8 a.m. exam, maybe because I had too much fun during the semester and didn't study enough. Those skills of quickly taking whatever little opportunity I've got before a performance, I can come into a community, study the community quickly, study the audience that's going to be in front of me, find connections to Theodore Roosevelt's life, and memorize them for the test. The test is my performance. But the ability to get on stage and know my audience, know what their connection to Theodore Roosevelt might be that they might not even know, and then hone an original performance for them that at the end hopefully leaves them inspired and entertained, the skills that I learned here at Suwannee are a big part of being able to deliver that product. And again, acknowledging I may not have answered the question that you asked.
Well, it was great to hear. And you mentioned with like a liberal arts education, you can do anything. And you talked about what Suwannee gave you. But specifically, what did a liberal arts degree from Suwannee do to enhance your career?
One of the things that it's certainly done is plug me into the Suwannee network. I explained earlier today with some students the dynamic that occurred when I was touring the 48 states in 2008 in honor of Theodore Roosevelt's 150th birthday and the final centennial year of his very influential presidency. And west of New Orleans, I called a friend, and he told me, "Oh, if that's you're headed west, you got to stop at Avery Island and meet Paul Micalhenny." Paul is the head of Tabasco Corporation. It turns out, and I knew this, Paul McIlhenny's great uncle was J.A. McIlhenny. He was a rough rider in Teddy's regiment. There's only 1,000 men that can say that, and 300 of them got left behind in Tampa, Florida. McIlhenny went to Cuba, was injured, and Theodore Roosevelt named him a United States Civil Service Commissioner under the Pendleton Act, mm-hmm. which is a position that Theodore Roosevelt held for a better part of 6 years. Even though McIlhenny was a Democrat and Roosevelt was a Republican, he understood that a Southern appointment probably meant appointing a Democrat in many cases. McIlhenny is actually part of the famous teddy bear hunt, from which the teddy bear gets its name in Mississippi, again, probably to be told tonight to your audience. The fact that when I called him in the morning, Mr. McIlhenny said that he had time on his schedule at 3 o'clock that he would see me. Had I just been Joe Wiegand, a guy who pretended to be Teddy Roosevelt, he may or may not have been interested in seeing me. I told him I was a Sewanee man. Mm. And whether you're a Sewanee man or a Sewanee woman, if you're calling somebody who knows and loves Sewanee and you're doing good work, chances are they're going to take your call, they're going to open the door, they're going to have a meeting with you. And that Sewanee network, it's not just anymore in the Old South. Mm-hmm. It's throughout the nation, it's throughout the world. And so I'm glad to have an opportunity to often kind of knit some Sewanee people together as well, Sewanee people that don't know each other, that we can help strengthen our network throughout the country. That's probably the greatest thing that Sewanee did. And again, I won't diminish the fact that at about the saddest time in my life, it was Sewanee that loved on me, lifted me up, got me from a point of in January losing my mother, and in June marrying my wife. That's pretty quick, you know, coming out of the gloom and up into the brightness. Mm-hmm. And Sewanee was a great part of that.
Good to hear.
Mm-hmm. Well, moving on to entrepreneurship, there's some very interesting things that you just mentioned there. Of course, you just mentioned the connections and the help that Sewanee gave you in a very difficult time. But there's this very interesting dynamic at play where, of course, you know, Roosevelt's known as this great individual. You know, he went into the Amazon, he did all these incredible things. But of course, nobody does it alone, and you're a one-man show. But you just spoke about all of the help you've been given throughout your career. So, looking at sort of your own career and Roosevelt's, how would you point to someone trying to find that balance between self-sufficiency and looking to others for help, and not getting rid of opportunities out of pride?
It's wonderful, wonderful question. Well put. I love that old statement: If you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. I may not be quoting it properly, but my work certainly is teamwork. My most important teammate is my business partner, my wife Jenny. We've been partners in this business. I shared some information with a colleague that mentioned that I started doing Theodore Roosevelt in 2002. Actually had incorporated our family business in 1998. I joke with your director at the Babson Center, my friend Miles Elledge, that apparently if you stay in business for 20 years and pay your bills, you're an entrepreneur. That might be one definition of what an entrepreneur is. One of the wonderful things I love about doing a one-man show is the delivery of that product. It's really all up to me as far as getting there. I explained earlier, I've been my own agent. I've been my own secretary. I write my own contracts. I market myself in the marketplace. So everything I've built has really been organic. A lot of favors, a lot of kindnesses done. A lot of people that gave me an opportunity to perform where they were taking maybe a leap of faith and a risk that, gee, there's a really important audience and Joe Wiegand, that goofy guy I knew in college, is gonna be the guy delivering the show. It's been a delight and very humbling for me that very often I'll finish a performance and audience members will tell me that, you know, maybe they've had a like Rotary Club. A guy's been in Rotary for 30 years and he'll pull me aside and he said, I've been in this club for 30 years. That's the best program we've ever had. Well, the credit goes to Theodore Roosevelt and in part to what Sewanee was honed in me and the ability to deliver a product on time in the right place in the amount of minutes. But there's also something that I've discovered in doing Theodore Roosevelt. Part of the greatest joy for me is going to a place like Nahant, which is on the coast of, north of Boston. It was the summer home of Henry Cabot Lodge and Fanny Lodge. And TR dedicated the library there. Well, to be able to perform in Nahant and reflect on the life of Henry Cabot Lodge, or to be able to perform in Ogdensburg, New York, and reflect on the life of Frederick Remington, to be able to go to Cartersville, Georgia, where I was, and share with that Georgia audience Theodore Roosevelt's fondness for Joel Chandler Harris. He said, "Presidents come and go, but Uncle Remus will be forever." These were the stories of Br'er Rabbit and Br'er Fox that Theodore Roosevelt heard from his mother and his grandmother. A really fun thing for me. It's related to Sewanee because of the breadth of our education. But it's also a reminder for me that I kind of have a responsibility to not just bring a set piece of Teddy Roosevelt to every community. When I perform, I celebrate that community. I celebrate the audience that's in front of me, because very often I just perform for the Daughters of the American Revolution, the Apache Trail chapter in Phoenix, Arizona. You know that Daughters of the American Revolution are probably doing just as much as anybody else to keep alive the spirit of the revolution, a sense of patriotism and good citizenship. They still give a citizenship award to graduating seniors in high school. Well, you can imagine their membership is dwindling. It's not really a cool thing to be a member of the Daughters of the American Revolution necessarily amongst some of the younger ladies of our country that do have, you know, descend from our revolutionary veterans. So again, I don't know if I've addressed the point of your question. I couldn't do what I do without the assistance of lots of wonderful people around the country. They're usually on the customer end because I have stood alone. It's a sole proprietorship in a way. It's a sub-S corporation. My wife and I do it on our own. But I couldn't do it without, in conjunction with a lot of other people that provide me with those performance opportunities. And then this has come up too. I learned that in my experience, and perhaps in other fields as well, and other entrepreneurs and other industries have assured me of this, you don't have competition, you have colleagues. You might even at first view them as competition, but because they're in the same field as you, there are going to be times when you can't deliver for a customer, but your colleague can. I now have men who portray Theodore Roosevelt that if I can't do a gig, I send them one of my friends. One of my friends who I know is going to do a good job. Mm-hmm. And I don't ask for a commission. I don't ask for a gig back. I don't ask for a referral. I just think that the world needs more Teddy Roosevelt. What's that? We need more cowbell? We need more Teddy Roosevelt, too. We really do. There's so much about the man that is uplifting. So I'm glad that in doing what I do, it's not just like in a studio doing a podcast. It'll be part of what I continue to develop with Teddy Talks. But I get to interact when I'm delivering my product. There's probably 15 or 20 people involved in the delivery of that product on my customer's end that I get to work with as a team. And when I get to go to schools, I get to kind of come and be a rock star. The kids love it. Even the kids that don't like history love the fact, man, Teddy Roosevelt was just there and he jumped up on a chair when he told the story of being shot in Milwaukee in 1914. That was really cool. October 14th, 1912. But those teachers, they do that every day, 6 hours a day. They try to take those students a little further down the field where they need to be. And so the fact that I get to be there and in a way know that I'm delivering a product for the students, sometimes it's the teachers that need a little Teddy Roosevelt, too. And we do that together. It's a give and take that we do together.
Well, that's really tremendous. And, you know as much as anybody else, more than anybody else, just what an utterly fascinating figure Theodore Roosevelt is in just American and world history. But just looking at him and looking at you, there's this, I mean, you've obviously had a rather interesting career, you know, moving from politics, then moving into the performing arts. Business is something that I detect as being sprinkled throughout all of this, but I'd imagine you majored in something like political science or history, not necessarily business. So how would you find throughout your entire career that business has sort of peaked its head and you've had to utilize it even when you didn't necessarily specialize in business, where you had a more general liberal arts degree?
Well put again. I think the necessity that the fact that eventually you got to pay the freight, you got to pay your bills. So many entrepreneurs wind up going bust, right? Maybe because they didn't finance their project sufficiently, or their product didn't meet the marketplace in the way that they intended. For me, being a political science major, had I declared a minor, it would have been a history minor, so you nailed me. The delight for me, and I shared this with Mr. Elledge this morning, if I put a pencil to it, if I ran the numbers, as your whole, I would have never done it. If I ran a spreadsheet on what the cash flow would be, I would have never done it. If it wasn't for Mr. MasterCard, Mr. Visa, and Mr. American Express investing in our efforts when we toured the country in 2008, getting the family into an RV, towing a Saturn, going to all 48 continental states, the Navy flew me to Hawaii. You can't do a 49-state tour. I went to Alaska, made a pilgrimage to the gravesite of Kermit Roosevelt, who took his own life in 1943 at Fort Richardson. That 50-state experience was something that put my family under a great deal of financial pressure. We were supposed to sell our house to finance the trip. Well, you might remember or have studied 07, 08, trying to sell a house that was a church that we converted into our home, 5,000 square feet, 1,000-gallon LP tank, 90 miles west of Chicago, surrounded by corn and soybeans and a dairy farm. Well, that stayed on the market until it was destroyed by an F4 tornado in 2015. We were selling it on a rent-to-own contract, and the insurance company made us both whole. But when gas went to $4.50 a gallon in 2008 in California, and it would take us a couple of tanks to get to the next place we were going, we might have questioned our sanity, or at least Mrs. Wiegand might have questioned my sanity. Theodore Roosevelt said, "One of life's greatest rewards is working hard at work worth doing." If it had been easy, I might not value it as much as I do. It was hard. We slept in Walmart parking lots. I've traveled across the country through the night and through blizzards to make my engagements. I've gotten a half hour of sleep in a rest area and cleaned up in a McDonald's bathroom to shave and put my hair straight as Teddy Roosevelt and make my appearance at whatever was waiting for me. The business aspect of it, there is a bit of that entrepreneurial, the energy that comes from prayerfully thinking, my goodness, I got to get two or three more gigs this month to pay the bills that are accumulated. And here's something that happens too, traveling by faith, opening up the mailbox. If we needed $800 to pay our bills, do you know I'd open up that mailbox and somebody'd send me an $800 check as a deposit for performance I'd be doing later in the year? There were little business acumens to pick up. I used to think that if I performed, you shouldn't pay me until after I finish my performance, delivery of goods, right? Mm-hmm. But then I realized cash flow. Now if I write a contract and ask you for 50% deposit at time of signing, my cash flow improves and you're much less likely to cancel the gig if you've already got 50% down and you can only get the deposit back if you cancel 60 days out. Because if you contract me and I don't make a penalty for your canceling, now I'm 60 days out, and I can't fill that date 60 days out. I probably can now. I can pick up the phone and probably get 200 gigs in the next 6 months if I wanted to. Part of the challenge has been lacking human resources, lacking the assistance of an assistant or an agent. I probably have customers that I could probably pick up the phone and working systematically, probably book 3 years of work, solid. At significant compensation. I'm too busy right now delivering my product to set up that regimen of getting the pipeline of product coming in. But it's a situation with which I'm comfortable. I can't wait. I didn't bring it today, but I've got a little tool that I use. It's a multi-year calendar. It's paper. It's full of colors based on what geographic section of the country I'm in, and it's full of whiteout because things change. I don't calendar on the computer. I don't calendar on my phone. I calendar on an old paper calendar, and because the information on my calendar is so valuable, I have a duplicate of it. So I do them both, and I color it. And is that oddball? Is that not a very bright way of doing business? I can't share my calendar with people. I'm okay. It's me and it's mine and it's the way I organize and have built my business. And every now and then I need to take a picture of some of my calendar pages and share that with my wife so she knows where I'm going to be and whether or not she wants to fly across the country to, you know, enjoy a gig. I'm glad she's with me now. Saw some wonderful friends down in Georgia and having a wonderful time here. You might know we have family here in Suwannee. Former Professor Marcia Mary Cook in the theater department.
Oh, I know who it is.
Yeah, you know Marcia Mary? MM, we call her in the family.
Yes, whenever I would do readings for the church, she would help to guide me through that.
That was a wonderful thing that that she did. I'm glad to know that she's still doing that. She'll get you to bite your T's and pop your P's and slow down.
She has told me to slow down more times than I can count.
We know our Marcia Mary.
We've talked about your product and how in the events of 2001 and going into 2002 in the political scheme in Illinois, you believed the world needed Teddy. Mm-hmm. And so in the world of business, we're to find a product that you think the people need and that they think they need. How did you convince the world that they needed Teddy?
Well, I think we all need hope, and we all need humor, we all need entertainment. So, you know, it's not as if I had to create a marketplace for entertainment, nor even for the genre of the one-person show. Hal Holbrook is Mark Twain. For 40 years, that man sold out theaters across the country doing a one-man show as Mark Twain. So, in this particular case, there is something, though, about Theodore Roosevelt and the life well lived, aspects of his character in his life that make him unique as distinct from other characters that one might portray. He's so well known, mm-hmm. even through some of the silliness, like Night at the Museum, mm-hmm. you know, that trilogy in which Robin Williams portrays, in a pseudo way, Theodore Roosevelt. What a delightful gateway to history that's been for a lot of students. I meet history majors in college, and if I ask how they got their start in history, sometimes they mention Night at the Museum and the characters in that movie. So I don't believe that I saw a product that wasn't yet being produced or delivered. There were indeed other men, as I mentioned earlier. I saw that there was a man in Oyster Bay, Long Island, where Teddy's home, Sagamore Hill, is located, a National Park Service historic site, portraying Theodore Roosevelt. There's a wonderfully famous friend of mine, Clay Jenkinson. He's portraying Theodore Roosevelt. He's on public radio with the Thomas Jefferson Hour. He portrays Sir Francis Drake, the scientist Oppenheimer, Meriwether Lewis. I say my friend Clay has multiple personality disorder. My dad is part of the example that taught me. He said, when I discovered them and lamented, he said, "Joey, don't worry about the other guys' gigs or his writing or his act. Work on your craft, work on your material, work on your gigs." And now again, I've mentioned I host a convention of Theodore mm-hmm. Roosevelt's every summer because indeed I've embraced this idea that we're the members of the same craft. Mm-hmm. We're colleagues rather than competition. Here's something that has developed, whether it was Ken Burns and his series on the Roosevelts. Audiences swelled for my live performances when that was playing on public television. Doris Kearns Goodwin and Steven Spielberg teamed up with Daniel Day-Lewis in the lead role. Lincoln, the movie, mm-hmm. was one chapter of her team of rivals. There are two projects in the works right now, and Hollywood went, "Wait, you can make $600 million on a historic biopic? We're in." 15 years ago, a young Leonardo DiCaprio and Martin Scorsese purchased the rights to the book I've mentioned, The Rise of Theodore Roosevelt. Mm-hmm. Well, it's young TR up to the age of 42, with a significant emphasis on young Teddy being out in the Badlands and healing from the loss of his wife and mother. I think DiCaprio's aged out of portraying Theodore Roosevelt the young man, but now things are done with CGI, and who knows how they might do that. But Doris Kearns Goodwin and Steven Spielberg 2 years ago announced that they were going to combine. There was a book called, by DKG, as we call her, The Bully Pulpit, mm-hmm. subtitled Theodore Roosevelt, William Howard Taft, and the Golden Age of Journalism. It's written through the lens of S.S. McClure's magazine, McClure's. Ida Tarbell, the great investigative journalist who brought down the Standard Oil with her book. William Allen White, Lincoln Steffens play roles in this book. And Spielberg and Doris Kearns Goodwin have come out and announced it's going to be a movie. The way our popular culture works, when either of those two movies hit the big screen, I know that I'm going to be a tremendous benefactor, because Leonardo DiCaprio is not going to be doing personal appearances in character as Theodore Roosevelt. Mm-hmm. Who's ready to pick up that scrap?
You.
Me. And for me, it's not scrap. It's my bread and butter. And as I move up in the marketplace and I'm able to now command honorariums and fees, payments, that 15 years ago, my smart brother-in-law, the businessman, said, you're not charging enough. Well, that's an easy thing to say if you're not the one in the marketplace trying to represent the product, where I know that sometimes those really high fees aren't there yet, but they're there now. And the reason they're there now is because I've done the work, mm-hmm. and I've got the product, and I've got the people that have purchased that product before that'll just be wonderful references for me. So I hope in a way that, and I think the market has confirmed, and it's been a leap of faith for me. It wasn't a business decision. It was something I had to do. Mm-hmm. And the marketplace now is saying, well done. Give us some more. Do it bigger and better. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think the possibilities of doing some things bigger and better are presenting themselves. We recently went for the second time. We went pre-COVID. We've gone post-COVID. The APAP, they call it, the Association of Presenters and Performers. It's basically the theater industry meeting and conference in New York City. Someone is going to wake up to the idea that Hal Holbrook is no longer packing those theaters. Mm-hmm. And they're looking for somebody to do so. And I hope to be ready. My father said that John Paul Getty, the Getty Oil business, mm-hmm. he said the way to make $1 billion is to find an economic void and fill it. If there is a void in the one-man theater show or the one-person theater show that inspires an audience, there's a void right now. And I'm glad that I've got the ability now and the tools to fill it and fill it quite well.
Well, you've spoken at length many things, such as the importance of, you know, networking and of just the raw grit it takes to take this sort of career. But for other people, you know, perhaps people who aspire to be entrepreneurs, or, you know, people from other areas, such as, you know, a young you going into politics, or someone else looking for a career change from politics into the performing arts, for all these sort of entrepreneurs and people looking to take these great leaps of faith, what kinds of advice might you give them?
Do it. There's something that I've seen, for me, that second career sometimes, that willingness to change. I lament that some of the brightest, most talented people I knew here at Sewanee are in a situation right now wearing golden handcuffs. They would go do that thing they would love to do. They would go move to that place they'd love to live, but they don't see how they can do so, because they've got a financial package or benefits at their current employer that they don't know how they would replace that. I never asked myself those questions of how do I replace my income as a top political consultant in the state of Illinois. I just knew that if I did good work, good things would happen. The experience of geographically replanting yourself or professionally replanting yourself, I'm a gardener. My Sewanee mentor, Mr. Wayne Craythorne, lost his mother in childbirth. His father gave him away to his aunt and uncle. His uncle, Mr. Greer, was 94 years old when we worked in the garden on Mr. Craythorne's ranch in California. And Mr. Greer turned to me and he said, Joey, there's not a problem in the world that you can't dig beneath the soil with your own bare hands. From that time on, gardening has been my therapy. Gardening is that thing that I can do to let my mind wander. Now, here's how weird I am. When I'm gardening, I'm listening to NPR on my phone, in part because I'm a center-right conservative. NPR is center-left. I want to know what other people are thinking. I don't want to get my information in a silo. But as I'm gardening, I also do some indoor stuff, and that's where, for me, I think human beings are not that different. If I've got a house plant, and I've had it for a long time, and it's in a container, if I wanted that plant to thrive, I take it out of the container and very often discover that it's root-bound. If you take that and put it into a larger container, loosen up the roots a little bit, add some more soil, repotting brings this thriving in a potted plant. My experience has been, through seeing others and through my own experience, boy, repotting and spreading your roots out, trying a different spot of sunlight. It's, you know, moving across the country, you're moving your job. Your colleagues, you guys are going to come out of Suwannee, a lot of you are going to go to professional school, and you may be pursuing something that you've either been told or you yourself has, it's been a dream. You're going to get a PhD, or you're going to get a law degree, or you're going to be a doctor. Well, shouldn't you be able 10 or 15 or 20 years hence to be able to look at that and reevaluate whether or not you're happy, whether or not you're professionally fulfilled? That for me is a lesson that I've learned through this dynamic, realizing that there's probably a cost to pay. My father, it was a joke of his, but he was on stage and he said a bunch of comedians were at a funeral for a fellow comedian. And one of the guys lamented, he said, Paul Fred, he died penniless. My dad's thought was, sounds like perfect timing to me. So because I did so much political and not-for-profit work trying to support good causes, I never had the idea of piling up wealth, or what are my investments, or what are my retirement. And somebody headed to Wall Street's going to say, that's the wrong way to think. You got to think about those things. The good Lord takes care of the lilies and the sparrows. He's taking care of me. Reference that $800 check that came in the mail when you needed $800 to pay your bills. And it's fun for me to experience now that without a plan for financial success, we're doing quite well, and we're on the verge of some financial opportunities and things that will happen in TV and film and in my own endeavors, where it'll be nice to be able to have some more to give away to help other people, to maybe leave the world a little bit better place like so many people have done before us. So to everyone who's listening to us, whenever this is listened to, I wish you all the best. And I give you this admonition from Theodore Roosevelt. Keep your eyes on the stars and your feet planted firmly on the ground. Believe you can, and you're halfway there. For yourselves, for your families, for your alma mater, for the country. Do what you can with what you have, where you are. An honor and a pleasure to be with all of you today. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming on to the podcast for this first version. I'm sure, especially with you as a guest, it's going to be a tremendous success. Thank you to anybody who might be listening. And we hope it's been informative and entertaining. That we hope that you'll join us again, and that the world of business, since it has many doors, we'd like to invite you to step in and open your own. Thank you very much.